Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Paletta Talk with Tim Beer, with your host, Tim Beer. I am honored to be joined here for my sixth interview towards the Progressive Summit with Justin Farmer, DSA-endorsed candidate for Connecticut State Senate. Justin, thank you for being here this morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for inviting me, and I appreciate being able to be the sixth person on. Hey.
All right. So to start off, typically, I like to ask the candidates what they do for a living. So what is it that you do?
So up until recently, I was working at Planned Parenthood until I decided to run. And I do property management. We have a rental property. And then
All right. So also you're a legislative councilman for Hamden's 5th district, right? So what are some policies and laws you've written and or helped pass in that seat?
So yeah, I've been on the legislative council or town council for the last 2.5 years.
All right. That,
huh?
No.
In that time, we've been able to pass the most comprehensive plastic bag ban in the state, which pushed the state legislature to enact a plastic bag ban. We passed a fracking ban ordinance along with other municipalities in an effort to push the state to do a fracking gas ban. And, you know, we've done tons of different resolutions. Right now, we're finally working on codifying having a civilian review board. After a shooting, a police shooting in my community 14, 15 months ago, we're finally getting around to actually starting to set up the structure. And approving it in our charter revision process.
All right. So you received huge endorsements from the Democratic Socialists of America, Sunrise Movement, and Hamden Action Now. Can you tell us who you're running against and why you're the right choice over them for your district?
I'm running against George Cabrera. Glad to have been able to earn the respect and support of Sunrise and DSA and Action Now. In terms of, you know, why I'm the best candidate, I care about the issues. The issues are personal to me. There's passion. There's not an issue that I'm brought to that I don't care about, that I don't have some type of personal stake in. And I think that's something different. So whether you're talking about reproductive justice, transportation justice, queer liberation, you're talking about criminal justice reform, you're talking about environmentalism, you're talking about making sure that we're having cultural competency. Pretty much anything that I've either been involved with, just legislation that I've helped work on, has been trying to get a doula bill passed for birth doulas. As we know, women of color, they face health disparities, and being able to have access to a doula to help them through the process, to advocate for them, to get rid of interference, especially when it comes to race-based medicine. It demonstrably and dramatically increases healthcare outcomes and mortality rates of women of color. Something that wasn't passed last session that from elected, I hope I can champion bring to the forefront, working on Title 15, which passed, working on paid family, pushing legislation for community choice aggregation, as we have the third highest energy rates in the country. Because I see things in an intersectional way, there's a lot of issues that I care about. And I think especially where we are now, yes, we need to talk about structural institutional racism. Yes, we need to talk about, you know, COVID and how we rebuild in the aftermath. But things like, cool, we need to build affordable housing. We have 170,000 people come August 24th who will be evicted. And we haven't gone into special session as a state legislature. My state legislature, my state hasn't gone into special session to deal with this issue. We're what, less than a month away. So, you know, that's why I feel I'm the better choice, is because I know about the issues, constantly paying attention to all the issues that are mostly because I serve people first in need, but I live in and I am a person first in need. So you know, that sense of urgency is where my attitude comes from.
All right. So, you know, you're running in the primary, and then also the current seat, the incumbent, is a Republican. So it's held by a Republican who barely won in 2018 by 100 votes against your primary opponent. So how do you plan to appeal to people who may be thinking about voting for him? And how do you plan on influencing higher voter turnout?
There is a ton of energy around my campaign, a ton of energy around our candidacy. You know, when I announced a month and a half after my opponent, I wasn't sure how much energy I'd have. Here in Connecticut, we have 3.5 million people. My campaign kickoff, within a week of announcing my candidacy, we were able to raise over $6,000. Actually raised over $7,000, $5,000 of which came in within the first 2 days. A week later, we did a campaign kickoff. We had over 110 people show up, support from communities across the state, from bike community, from environmental groups, from students from other universities, from local stations, Sunrise people, Planned Parenthood community members, elder groups, like just so many different community members coming out and showing support. COVID hit us and that kind of set us back. But right now we have over 100 volunteers. You know, we have like 80 volunteers making at least one shift of phone calls or door knocking a week. We, you know, have a great social media presence. And something that's different is that, you know, as an activist elected official, I've been seen in different capacities. So I've been seen in, you know, normal traditional council meetings, but I also have been seen, you know, on the forefront in protests, in demonstrations. You know, so for me, you know, since George Floyd, there's probably been, dozens of protests that I've gone to where I'm literally talking to thousands of people. And they're hearing our message and they're hearing our passion. So I feel, and with this thought, I feel way of voters is going to be very different, where I'm unapologetic about my truth. And although, you know, not everyone in this district is as left as me, I think that sincerity and being able to say where I am on the issues, someone can agree to disagree, But they know that I'm not going to sell them snake oil. I'm not going to lie to them. And if I say I'm going to work on something or do something, I have every intention to do that. And I think that that's more important now more than ever, where like people literally just don't trust people. And especially people who vote for Trump, where they're like, well, I don't like X, Y, and Z, but I like the fact that he says what he says. And like, to which I'm like, well, we on the left need to like have that same playbook. Like, yeah, cool. I am a socialist. Yeah, that is true. Yes, I want affordable housing for everyone. Yeah, I want to radically change how things work. Cool. I believe healthcare is a human right. Great. I believe women should have autonomy over their own bodies. Like, yeah, no, I'm not going to apologize about, yes, we have a climate emergency. We need to deal with it. There's some issues people will rock with, others they won't. I think the national energy behind our candidacy and, you know, just sticking to where we are on the issues, you have a lot of people who will respect the fact that, you know, we're honest with our intentions. And I think that's going to be the difference between my candidacy and others.
All right. So one thing you're running on is affordable, reliable public transportation for your district and the state of Connecticut. That's something that's, you know, as a New Yorker, extremely important to me, even though it's out of my jurisdiction. And aside from Senator Ed Markey, I don't really hear much about that topic on the congressional level. So it's good to see here. How, as state senator, would you propose that and approach the next steps?
Well, you know, something, New York City, you know, y'all have a lot of transportation for the last mile. You have tons of dollar vans and things like that to adapt where, you know, the main arteries are run by trains and buses. With the offshoots, you have these dollar vans, you have more affordable, more comprehensive transportation where people can get to more niche places without spending a ton of money on infrastructure, spending a ton of money on, you know, huge buses and figuring out all that infrastructure and timing and all those things, and also low carbon. For me, I think part of the issues that we have had forever is that we, here in Connecticut, we haven't connected our ring cities ring suburbs to our rural and suburban areas. You know, when you look at other communities, for instance, I have family in England. Even in the middle of nowhere England, you can catch a city bus to go to different parts of the country at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, even though businesses are open. I'm just like, why is there transportation infrastructure for to get around places when things aren't even open? Yeah. Meanwhile, here we have cities that literally you cannot get a city bus past 5 o'clock at night, which is insane because you lock people out of opportunities or jobs and also restaurants, businesses, other things like that. That retail that is open until 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, they are essentially shut out of markets. So what I want to do is I want to take a lot of that transportation money and connect it to our housing and make sure that we're building affordable transportation connected to affordable housing so that working class communities are able to get to and from work. And that will, one, attract younger people, but it also will attract employees. If they don't have a base to get employees, does it make sense for them to spend money and infrastructure to set up shop? Something that also I want to do is green our fleet. The initial investment of greening our fleet will save us money in the long run. We have a lot of electric buses so far in Connecticut, but electrifying our school buses and so on and so forth. The last thing is focusing on rail. especially in the sense of there's two rail lines in my community. In my town of Hamden, you know, I want us to do some freight delivering goods and services through our rail lines. Here with New Haven, so you know, tons of things come in through New Haven that could be shipped via the train lines of Hamden, but also make a train stop in our community from Hamden to Hartford, as we're nestled in between two major cities, being Hartford and New Haven, and then the port of Naugatuck is another development to make a freight hub in the community of Naugatuck, the borough of Naugatuck, to allow freight from Canada across New York to be able to move freely without having to take planes or boats, as it's just cheaper and it'd be faster, as well as the fact that the design for the place of the port would have access to roadways, rail, as well as boat access. The very last thing is focusing on the Waterbury line. There's a train line that has literally been talked about for 20 years, where they just haven't put in the infrastructure for signaling to allow two train cars be on the track at the same time. But you have tons of people coming in from New York and tons of people going to New York for work who literally will drive an hour away just to park their car to take the train, where I'm just like, cool, we can improve commerce and have more people coming between these communities and actually have more effective and faster trains, where, you know, you have people taking our train rides, buying houses out here in Connecticut just because they have more land. If you can speed up that process and have faster trains, if it only takes an hour for me to get from to see family in Jamaica, Queens to Manhattan, it's kind of insane that from, you know, New Haven to Manhattan is 2 hours.
Right.
Yeah, a trade from Queens to Manhattan is an hour. Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, we're literally shutting ourselves out of markets, shutting ourselves out of opportunities for workforce development, as well as just, you know, commerce. So those are things that I want to do where, you know, even in some communities that are more rural, like, cool, explaining, like, cool, you don't have to like people in the city, but, like, them coming through your community gives your community money. Your community having money means you can hold down your people. And that's something that I feel like a lot of other elected officials have been like, oh, we don't want to be like those cities. I'm like, why? They have money. We need money for our community. Like, why not?
Right. So, like you said, I definitely agree. It's pretty insane. And it doesn't add up how it works, public transportation. So what will your first steps be as state senator should you win? What's your highest priority right now of all the platforms you're running on?
I would say a Green New Deal. You know, I think that we're talking about demonstrable changes that we need to have. And I feel that climate justice is so pinnacle right now. You know, even things like COVID can be affected, where literally the way that our temperature has changed has literally made this virus be able to proliferate longer than it normally should. Things, people becoming climate refugees. Thank God that we haven't had any natural disasters or anything, but if you do, you know, the last couple of weeks we've had hurricane warnings. Once we get into tornado season, earthquake season, wildfire season, and we're still combating COVID,
right,
how do you social distance? If you have a wildfire and everyone has to, like, move to a place to become safe, how do you social distance, if an earthquake happens, and they're rescuing people, how do you, and housing, how do you social distance? If a tornado rips through the area, all these things can be affected, but more so, just talking about greening our infrastructure, having industries that are not, extractive, but add value. Building, for instance, Yale University is in our backyard. They doubled down on connecting all these new buildings to a power plant. That is doubling down for the next 40 years, investing into a power plant. My state, there's a neighboring community in Killingly that is building a power plant. It's something that why am I forgetting the name? They're building a power plant doubling down on one, we don't actually need the energy for the power plant, so we're going to be selling it to other communities. But two, it's environmentally unfit for this area that has some of the poorest air quality. So when we talk about and look at things, it's just like, cool, the price that it will cost to build this and the jobs that it will give us temporarily does not outweigh the health and environmental factors that it causes us over a long run, especially if healthcare continues to go up. So these are the type of things, like the Green New Deal makes us and forces us to think about everything differently, as well as think about, like, how do we have more low carbon jobs? Because I think that is like the biggest thing is like, yeah, I want more people to be able to work and to have a living and be able to take care of themselves and hold down their communities. But, you know, how do you compete against, you know, things like, you know, fighting with trade unions versus like, cool, I want you to have good jobs. I want you to have good wages. But I don't want you to build a power plant that's literally going to poison our communities. Like that, like, I think that is a false choice. I don't feel that we have to either pick between helping the economy or protecting our natural resources and community members. So like the ideas of like CCAs, allowing us to bulk our energy costs together, fighting back against energy companies and conglomerates to keep net metering so that as people invest in solar panels and other things and have microgrids, that they continue to be able to pay back into the system rather than just have the energy company collect their extra energy and not compensate them for it. And doing things to bring in job development so that we are figuring out ways to green our buildings, whether it's installing solar panels and creating jobs through that, or it's, doing things like undergrounding wires. There's plenty of things that we can do that can add to quality of life that have the potential to have jobs. So, yeah, that I think the Green New Deal is the thing that I'm most excited about.
All right. Is there any final message you'd like to send out today?
Yeah, we're 16 days away from the election. I was joking the other day. I am the fourth oldest person on my campaign. At 25, I'm the fourth oldest. There's one person who's 44, one person 42, and my campaign manager who's a year and some months older than me. My deputy campaign managers are both 18, one starting college next year, and one college freshman. This is really much a movement, not a moment. So I want everybody, to take a look at our website, justinforct.com, justinforct.com. think about the things that you see there, think about what you need in your community, and reach out, as we need more people to run all over, and we need more people to think about how we're going to radically change things. And that's just a message I'd love to leave with your viewers.
Right. So thank you for reaching out and joining today, Justin. It was a pleasure. Everyone, be sure to follow Justin on Twitter at Justin4CT, that's F-O-R-C-T, and visit his website again at www.justin4ct.com. Again, F-O-R, it'll be written in this episode's bio. Donate if you can. If you cannot, volunteer, like Justin said earlier. Phone bank, door walk if you're in the district, text bank. If you can do both, I encourage you to do so. That would be amazing. Also, follow me on Twitter at itstimbeerc. Subscribe to Political Talk with Timbeer on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Share, view other interviews for the Progressive Summit I've had. Thank you very much again, Justin, for your time. I wish everyone and your families a safe, great day and week.
Thank you as well.